You're listening to CJMQ 88.9 FM. My name is David, and today I have the pleasure of talking with Jerry Cutting from Townshippers Association. Jerry, how are you holding up in the pandemic, and how is Townshippers Association doing during these times?
Well, I am able to report that I think as far as Townshippers Association has been able to handle all of this, we've done a rather amazing job. And I think that's primarily due to the kind of dedication and expertise that the staff have. So we've been able to do in all of this is keep up the bulk of a lot of the services, except for those that require coming in and being served on site, in a fashion that we have also been able to develop a lot more connection with community using social media and using electronic media. It has certain drawbacks, but on the other hand, in a situation where we have to have some forms of communication, Zoom has been a marvelous tool in helping us to be able to communicate and have a sense of who is there and at least interact in terms of this virtual world, which has helped us, I think, a lot to be able to also maintain a certain sense of sanity and groundedness. I think that's one of the biggest challenges of this pandemic, is that we are into forms of forced isolation that is, I think, so alien to human beings in general. And because we're in a rural setting, when we do have opportunities to get together and share things with each other, it becomes all that more precious. So I think what we're seeing now is that people know that they have been able to hold up under these conditions. And we have lots of promises on the horizon around vaccination, around keeping to the program, and seeing our way through this. It's a condition where I think we now definitely see light at the end of the tunnel, but we still have a ways to go.
Yes, for sure. But as you say, there is a lot of cause for optimism, given all the vaccines that are starting finally to be distributed.
I think one of the factors there is that we've had to contend ourselves with I think, two dialogues that have been going on. One is the political dialogue that has tried to maintain optimism and has tried to put out a message, don't worry, it's really almost tomorrow. And then the other message that we're getting, which is more from the scientific and medical community, saying, you know, we have to be cautious here. We can't let down our guard because there are many questions that we still don't know answers with. Vaccinations are dependent upon production, and we've seen that production has not brought those vaccines into our local scene as fast as been promised. And the other factor, too, that we have to be very, very conscious of is that I heard a report, I think, just in the last couple of days where it would appear that the Pfizer vaccine, when we're dealing with people over 65, can take at least up to 21 days before it really is effective. So we have to be careful. It's not just a question of getting the needle today and tomorrow feeling that we are absolutely protected and that we're not a threat to others. We're still, I think, in a state of discovery, and that's where I think we have to balance out those two messages that we're getting consistently, and somewhere in the middle, I think, is the reality for our situation.
That's for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I understand that you've been deeply involved with some of the language debate going on recently.
Yes, and you know from the history of Townshippers that we were founded over 40 years ago in order to deal with Bill 101. And since that time, we have, I think, consistently had to take on an advocacy role for the English-speaking population of the townships, and I think in many instances it has been a message that has been one that's applicable to all of the English communities that are not on the island of Montreal. And the kinds of circumstances that we encounter and the kinds of legal definitions to what we can and can do in English have brought, I think, some drastic changes over the year to the makeup of our English community. And this most recent one, I think, plunges us right back into a very, very difficult, scary conversation that is at one point going to manifest itself in a form of legislation at both the federal and provincial levels. So I think, you know, in answer to your question, we most definitely have, as an association, have taken up this issue, and it's primarily the issue of how will the Official Languages Act be modernized, and that is to bring it up to date with the fact that we are seeing a lot of changes that have occurred with the French-speaking population in a minority situation outside of Quebec, and certainly within Quebec, the ongoing struggle for the English community to maintain access to health services and also to maintain control of our school system. And with a robust revision of Bill 101 supposedly on the horizon, we are now, as an association, trying to keep up with the proposals. There's a working paper on the modernization of the Official Languages Act that we have studied, and we have taken it upon ourselves also to meet with our local MPs, and in particular with Madame Bibeau, who is the member in cabinet in our area, and is someone who has been always a very good friend to the English community. And so we are finding ourselves now looking at how do we present our point of view regarding the working paper and all that it includes as far as how we are going to be able to maintain what is, I think, a pillar of our Canadian democracy, and that is the idea that is enshrined in law that we are a country that has two official languages, and that in terms of looking at the duty, responsibility of the federal government, it has a role to play in ensuring that minority communities in French, minorities outside of Quebec, and the English minority inside of Quebec are given support and access to funding that can ensure that our vitality is ongoing. And that's been a very difficult process, and the modernization, we were very optimistic that it would show ways and means in which there can be enshrined in law vehicles that will help us in our ongoing struggles to make sure that our community is not always in a vulnerable situation, but able to have a kind of a life whereby English speakers can feel that they have an opportunity to be contributing citizens to Quebec and Canada, and that there is a chance of having a happy, prosperous life in Quebec under whatever circumstances that we might encounter.
Yeah. Is there anything of particular in the working paper that has you more concerned?
Yes. I would have to say, if you look at the absolute affirmation that the French communities outside of Quebec are going to receive, if you look at that in comparison to what is going to be the big battle in bringing this paper forward, is that right now we have the three opposition parties in Ottawa are making sounds and making approaches whereby they would certainly be in a position where they would be soliciting the French vote in Quebec by going along with two major changes. One of them is extending Bill 101 to cover federally regulated institutions. That's the banks, the post offices, Air Canada, and a number of others. We feel that this is very, very dangerous because it would be not just a slippery slope, it would be one which would mean in effect then that the English presence is guaranteed in terms of service. And in a federally regulated institution, when you walk into the post office, there is a sign there that says you have a right as a Canadian citizen to be served in the language of your choice, either French or English. Bill 101 changes the dynamic so that people who work in the institution must work in French. And English services may, now I'm highlighting that word, may be offered services where warranted. And who gets to decide that? It's no longer the federal government. It is, in fact, the Office de la langue française. So that's a very troubling aspect of what could happen in order to get, I think, appeasement. And the other major, major issue here is that the Quebec government, in offering its recommendations for the modernization, has clearly stated that it feels that there should be only one official language in Canada, and that should be French. And that means then that if this were to be enshrined in law, the English-speaking minority of Quebec would lose all of its right to support under the federal systems, meaning that and that is guaranteed in the Official Languages Act as it is now. So the modernization of the Act, as far as the present Quebec government is concerned, should be modified to exclude one of the minority language groups, the English, in Quebec. That is a very, very dangerous, very disturbing positioning of the Quebec government. Mm-hmm. And we would feel that right now, as I said in an interview that came out in the record, I think we're on the chopping block. Is that we are, as the English-speaking community, I think seen as a way in which political parties may find some corridor agreements whereby we could be, I think, severely transformed in terms of our rights and freedoms under the Act in order to be able to get votes from the nationalist and sovereigntist proponents that are in Quebec and who are very, very active at this point.
Well, there has been, just to look at the other side of the coin, I think a lot of the services that we do receive on a day-to-day basis, just as regular people in Quebec, end up being really at the... No, I don't want to say at the mercy, but at the gentillesse of the person you're dealing with. So if you go into a bank and you speak to someone and they see that you're having trouble in French, they switch to English. I mean, a lot of goodwill exists and I think will continue to exist, won't it? I mean, a lot of it right now, even though you have the rights to be served in English in federal institutions, really comes down to who's on the other side of the counter a lot of the times.
Very much the case. And I think one of the factors here that we can never, never discount is that because of our traditions that we have here in the townships, where we have the two founding peoples, the two founding linguistic groups, have always been able to work things out to a great extent. And one of the ways in which they worked it out is by having respect for the dignity of the other person. And what could happen, though, is that in terms of changing that dynamic, if you look at, say, the banks are really private companies that abide by federal regulation. And that's unlike the post office that is managed by a federal system. And in terms of looking at how banks have often adopted their way of doing business, is that they're in competition. So that if you walk into one bank and you have to struggle in order to be served in the language you're most comfortable with, you might just try out another bank. And this is one of the factors that I think means to a great extent that it is a bit of the free market system that operates. And if 85% of all of the clientele walking through your door speak French, chances are you're going to do your utmost to make sure that they don't go next door. But you'd also want to make sure that that other percentage of the potential clientele feel they're welcomed also. There are these traditions.
Then if it comes down to the bank wanting to offer services to its clientele in the language that they want, I mean, won't any changes to Bill 101 or change in the legislation of what is a minority language, wouldn't that still come down to the individual bank's choice, pretty much as it is now? Wouldn't that be the same?
Well, I think here everything is in the fine print. And what I've understood from talking with a representative of Madame Jolie's office is that the white paper takes an approach whereby there could be a separation or will be a separation between those institutions that are private companies and those institutions that are under the direct management of the federal systems. And that while it may be possible to look at extending a form of language legislation in the Official Languages Act, that would mean that a French-speaking individual has the right to work in French in these institutions without having to have Bill 101 imposed, because there are real differences that can do occur, as we know are reported. All it takes sometimes is someone saying hi to a potential customer in Westmount, and first thing we know, there is a barrage of art in the Journal de Montréal. This is how you can destroy goodwill. And what we are very, very much concerned about is that how far can you go in saying that something that resembles Bill 101 can be applied without having then there be a shift to you would like to be able to serve, but your supervisor just told you have to serve everyone in French because there is not a demonstrable need for English services here.
Do you think would be a possibility some organization some government organization would say that I speak perfect English, but I'm not allowed to speak to you in English because we predominantly only recognize the French language? Do you think that would be a possibility?
That already exists in provincially regulated institutions, particularly in hospitals, where we know that there are people who've come in and have asked, and people said, you know, I'm sorry, I have to deal with you in French because this hospital or this organization is not covered under Bill 101, where there has to be a demonstrable need and incorporated into legislation. And that's why there are so many municipalities that are in the townships that the Bill 101 applies if you can demonstrate you have at least 50% of your population is English speaking. If it drops below that, the municipality has no obligation to provide any service. And depending then on what may be a human factor, there may be, you will serve only in French. And look at what happens when often you will dial into a provincial service and the message is downline for English service, and someone comes on in French. If you begin speaking English, there will be a switch over to English, but we know from what has come through, which there are people who have said, yes, we are on the English line, but we've been told, always start in French, and if the person then responds in French, continue in French, not in English. So on the provincial scene, this does apply. The big concern then is that if this is if Bill 101 could be extended then to the federally regulated institutions, particularly in rural areas where there are very small English concentrations, there could be quickly then a drastic cutback in the ability to be served in the English language. This is what we are very much concerned about.
Well, it certainly sounds like an uphill battle. As you say, the parties involved want to curry as many votes as they can, and they see some way to get more votes in Quebec by perhaps catering to more nationalistic views. So I guess what you're describing is really a very uphill battle.
Well, it is. If you consider that the three opposition parties, when this working paper is translated into a bill and put before the House, they have the votes to modify or to out and out refuse adoption of this bill. The bill is one in which it is, for all intents and purposes, it is an optimistic point of view. It guarantees in the Official Languages Act also that we have the right to funding on the justice in the justice system, and that we can, if there are out-and-out attacks on our constitutional rights, have access to funding to be able to carry out a court battle. That will be enshrined, as it is, into the Official Languages Act. So no matter who's in power, once it gets into law, it can't be removed easily. And with the commitment that is in the working paper to deal with the English-speaking minority as an official minority of Canada guarantees then that we will have that kind of support and backing. But if we are conscious of the fact that a bill can only pass in a minority situation if there is going to be support given from one of the at least one of the minority parties. The Bloc Québécois is clear. They support the positioning of the CAQ. In the past, the NDP has declared that it is quite prepared to extend Bill 101 to federally regulated institutions, and even to recognize French as being the only official language.
The only official minority language.
So what we have then is a very precarious position. The working paper, it is possible the working paper won't even make it to legislation. If we, you know, looking at something that could happen, supposing this government falls in the spring when it presents its budget, then quite likely this whole exercise will fall by the wayside. And what will happen to us in the future, we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly sounds like you have your hands full with quite a battle there.
Well, I think what we have is something quite different. We're used to always having to battle for our rights and freedoms with the provincial legislation, the proposed legislation.
Yeah, exactly.
And this, I think for the first time, we see the real possibility that our status as a minority community could be seriously modified at the federal level. To what extent would a federal government choose to modify it. And the working paper, I know not everyone is happy with it. There are people who feel it's way too short in putting out what needs to be further guarantees. But I think what we have to look at is that since the passing of Bill 101, French is the official language of Quebec. And what we have is a dichotomy that is very hard to understand. We have Canada that constitutionally is a country that has two official languages. In Quebec, because of a provincial law that was upheld, by the way, by the Supreme Court, French is the official language. So as an English community, we're always bouncing around with this. And what we look to then is the federal legislation, the federal positioning, in order to guarantee that we will have a status that will permit us to be able to argue effectively on behalf of our community in the areas that are under provincial jurisdiction. And the main ones, of course, are health and education.
Yes, I was going to ask about education. Do you see that any of this could affect the educational system here in Quebec, the English school system?
Well, if it were to be recognized that French only, at the federal level, is the only language that's regarded as an official minority language, there is a very real possibility then that a provincial government could argue in the courts that because there is no official minority that has right under the Constitution to manage its own school systems, it could certainly be at risk. And right now, I think what we're seeing is that as the challenge to the legislation that removed French language school boards, and the attempt to remove English language school boards is in the courts. So there's a good chance that the English communities will win that battle in the courts, because the only way to then get away with abolishing English school boards is to change the Constitution. And there's constitutional grounding that gives this as a fundamental right of our community. But I think we have to be very, very conscious of what has happened every time, and here's something else that we're concerned about as councilors. Every time a federal service has been transferred to the province, it has led to less service. Manpower, when it was transferred to Ottawa, Quebec, we began to see fewer and fewer services, fewer and fewer programs being offered in English to the English community. And look at many other transfer payments that come through for health and also for education. In my 35 years of working in higher education, this is one of the big, big battles that was always fought. There's money that is transferred every year for post-secondary education and for colleges, for CSEPs. And we would, in the English system, say, where's that money going? And what we discovered is that sometimes it would go directly into the general fund. Other times, it would be the money would be used for translation, to translate material from French into English to be used in French CSEPs. And so to find out where that money actually ends up, without firm accountability principles in place, we have not enjoyed, I think, the kind of transparency and the kind of open funding that would help to increase the vitality of the English community. And when we have a government that is now in place that, through its legislation, is clearly targeted the vitality of the English community, you remove the institution from a community, where then it's it's very much a fact that you remove the tools and the vehicles whereby the community can express itself.
Well, that certainly is a lot to think about, and I want to thank you very much for being with us today, and I want to make sure that you keep us informed on this as it evolves, because it sounds like there's going to be quite a bit of follow-up required to keep track of any proposed changes and where they just stand in the legal system. It seems to be very up in the air.
Well, that's unfortunately is very much the case, but please count on us to be able to do everything we can and to try and keep you informed. And we think that an informed listenership is one way in which we can defend ourselves. The
exactly.
more we know, the more we can be articulate about what we want and what we won't put up with.
Exactly.
So I thank you for what you're doing for our community, and it's very important work. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Jerry. We've been speaking with Jerry Cutting from Townshippers Association, keeping us informed on the working papers that are going on about the language debate here in Quebec. Once again, we're going through another language debate. What fun. Thank you very much, Jerry.
And thank you.